Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for the Funville Nine, driven by AAA, the official weekly podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels. Here's your host, Trey Wilson.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Funville Nine, driven by AAA, the official podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels. My name's Trey Wilson. I'm the play-by-play broadcaster and director of communications for the Flying Squirrels. On this episode of the Funville Nine, we're catching up with 2019 Richmond Flying Squirrels left-handed pitcher Caleb Berger. He's a Michigan native, a former Indiana Hoosier, and he had a breakout season with the Flying Squirrels during his AA campaign in 2019. Berger was selected as an Eastern League All-Star and represented the Flying Squirrels as the Western Division's starting pitcher when the annual All-Star game was hosted at the Diamond on July 10th of 2019. And Caleb Berger joining us on this week's episode of the Funville Nine, driven by AAA. Caleb, thanks so much for coming on with us this week.
Thanks for having me, Trey. Happy to be here.
So where are you? Are you out in Arizona right now?
Yeah, I'm still in Arizona. So I actually moved out here in November and then obviously stayed after spring training was over, and I've just kind of been training out here now, waiting to hear what's going to happen and what we're going to do.
Now, last week's episode, Jacob Hayward was on with us and he said the same thing. He's still out in Arizona and he's found some ways to stay active and play baseball. How have you been able to make that happen? Do you know some people or some facilities? Because I guess y'all can't use the Giants facility in Scottsdale, right?
Right, yeah. So I actually found, through Tyler Sear, I found a place in Tempe called Push Performance. And so I've been going there really since everything shut down. And he's kind of kept it, like, we've kept it very, very low amount of people. And I think at one point we were like max four people at a time. So it was just like four pro guys come in, everybody like stay away from each other, get your work in, get out, you know. So I've been doing that since end of March. It's been perfect. And I'm actually throwing a live BP to Hayward on Saturday.
Oh, that's so great. A little crossover.
Cool. Yeah.
Last time that I saw you would have been back right around the beginning of March in Scottsdale, and we thought that we were going to be playing ball somewhere. You know, you were probably going to be heading off to a minor league affiliate in Richmond or Sacramento and getting your season started, and then everything kind of just came to a complete stop and a halt. What was that process like for you?
It was crazy, you know, like one day I was supposed to pitch the day everything got shut down. So it was like I had my routine or whatever, and like I try to always get up and get moving and get a coffee, like on a day I got to throw in spring training because the games are so early. And I look at my phone, I get a text like, hey, like field's shut down for cleaning. We'll have more information later. I'm like, oh, that's weird. And then the day goes by and they're like, all right, like we're going to start shipping everybody home. And it went from being like, we're getting ready to ramp up because spring training was just about to start for us. Like we were playing our first games or whatever. So it was like ramp up and then just shut down with nothing. So it was weird, you know. Everyone kind of felt lost, and I know especially for me, like the first 2 weeks was the hardest for me because like I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know, they didn't really tell us what we were doing. It was kind of just like everybody figure out for yourself. So that's when I really started to think like, hey, this might go on for a while with everything else that's getting kind of shut down around the country. So I might as well try to see what I can do to make myself better and use this downtime.
Yeah, you know, I think it was that way for everyone in all walks of life. Everything was going along pretty normal. This virus was something we were hearing about off in the distance. And then one day, all of a sudden, bam, everything starts to close and it became very real for everyone. But for baseball players and for people like you who are so routine driven, your downtime was supposed to be done. This was supposed to be go time and has to be a weird stoppage of life, really, for the baseball world.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like I put my foot in my mouth too. I remember like when all this stuff started breaking, we were all at spring training still. I was like, oh, it's just going to blow up. Over. It's not that bad. And then like, lo and behold, a week later, I was like, all right, like that was probably the dumbest statement I've had in a while. Like this is real. Like this is serious. Like it's going to change the way everything is done, at least for the next year. you know? So yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me has been to be positive about it and like try to find positive outlooks on what's going on. Cause obviously like with no baseball, it's difficult to do that. You know, hopefully this was supposed to be a good year for me and I'd give myself a shot at getting to the big leagues. But obviously now like everything's on hold. So for me, it was about not sulking and being like, oh, like if baseball was around, like blah, blah, blah. It was more of like, all right, like here's where we are. How can we make this like a positive influence on like my career?
We find and make the most of the situation that we're given with whatever 2020 ends up being. We'll talk about 2020 and going forward a little bit more, a little bit further down the road in this conversation. But one question that I was thinking about that I don't think I ever asked you last year while you were in Richmond, I was curious, how many different ways have you heard your last name pronounced?
Probably like infinite. Oh my gosh. That's like, it's so funny because at a young age, my dad was always really like, he was very like adamant that our last name should be pronounced correctly. And so like whenever someone would say it wrong, he would like correct them and like forcefully, you know what I mean? He's like, no, that's not how you say it. And I'm like, all right, dad, like relax. And so I'm sure it drives him up a wall, you know, because I remember like even my first year in pro ball, like in Augusta, it seemed like every affiliate we played against, like someone said it differently, you know? And the worst part is like, I'm pretty sure it's in the book, like phonetically. So it should get pronounced correctly, but I think it's just one of these things at this point where I'm like, it is what it is.
It's Berger, right?
Right. Yeah. Like Berger.
A little bit behind the scenes of how things go from the media side on our end. We put together pronunciation guides. When y'all get to town, we ask you how it's said. We write it out phonetically, like you said. And That's how we rely on the other teams as well. So when visiting teams are in, there was a situation last year where we had a pronunciation guide for, I'm not going to throw the team under the bus and say who it was, but we were pronouncing this player's name wrong in his whole outing. He was a starting pitcher and he had a pretty good outing, and we said his name wrong the whole time. And I get on Twitter later and look, and his family had sent us a tweet correcting us, and we just went off of what was given to us by the other team's media people. We try to make sure, at least in AA with Richmond and the Eastern League, that we're telling the opposing broadcasters, because your families are watching those games. If we're on the road, they're watching on MILB TV with the other team's play-by-play people. So we try to make sure that we get together and we go through all those pronunciations, but sometimes I guess some still slip through. So what's the most egregious pronunciation of Berger you've heard?
Oh, the worst one? I get Barragar a lot, which is like, that's how it looks. So like, I'm all right with that. But I've gotten Beringer before and there's no N, there's no I. So I'm kind of like, where are we getting like Bering from? But to each their own. I mean, it's obviously not an easy job, and I can't imagine having to try to look at all the names in baseball and try to pronounce them, because there are some tough ones for sure. So like at this point, I'm just like, yeah, it is what it is. Like someone will get it right eventually, you know, and like the home guys always get it right. So that's what's important.
We do what we can. We certainly try. B-A-R-A-G-A-R, Berger. That's so we've got it on record right here on the Funville 9. That's how the name is pronounced. Anybody's ever doing some research for a start down the road, they pull up this podcast, it's Caleb Berger. And then eventually, hopefully, you'll pitch your way in a position where everybody knows what it is, they get it right anyway. So that's
exactly. Yeah, I figure if I make a big enough name for myself, it'll be a lot easier for people to pronounce.
So you grew up in West Michigan near Grand Rapids, right?
Yeah, about 15 minutes outside of Grand Rapids and 15 minutes away from the lake. So like right in between the lakeshore and Grand Rapids.
Were you much of a baseball fan growing up out there?
Yeah, I was. I actually grew up a Cubs fan. My dad works in like the beverage distribution industry. So he like knew the Corona beer rep in Chicago pretty well. Ended up becoming friends with him. So he'd get us pretty good tickets like two or three times a year to go to Cubs games. So I actually grew up going to a lot of Cubs games.
Yeah, you're not really that far in Grand Rapids. I spent a season working with the team in Lansing, which is just down the interstate. And
okay, yeah.
I made my first, the only time I've ever to this day been to Wrigley Field, we had an off day and I said, I have to go. You know, I've never been. So we made the trip. It was a pretty easy trip even from Lansing. You're probably not too much further from Wrigley than you would be from Detroit across the state, right?
No, it's actually closer to go to Wrigley. It's like an hour. It's just under 2 hours to go to Wrigley. And it's like 2.5 hours to go to Comerica from my house.
I went to Wrigley Field, I think the last season before they made all the, where they added the video board and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been back since I was younger, so I never even got to see any of the new stuff. I just remember always we would always like stay at a hotel and then take the train into the city. And it was so crazy. Like, it was so cool getting to do that. And like, as a little kid growing up, and I was a huge Sammy Sosa fan. So I need to watch that documentary on ESPN now about him, McGuire. He was like my favorite player growing up. Like, I'm a terrible hitter, which obviously you can attest to, like watching me try to swing this year. But I'd like play wiffle ball with my brother and my dad, and I would always like hit the ball and then do the little hop that he did whenever he hit a home run. Like, man, that's crazy.
So speaking of hitting, they've been talking about the universal designated hitter for a long time and pitchers no longer hitting. You got to hit for the first time last year as a professional in Double A. Do you enjoy hitting? You admitted that you're not great at hitting, but is it something that you enjoy being part of the game?
I like it. Yeah. I hope they don't get rid of it. Honestly, I hope they get rid of the DH. Like, if you can't play a position, I don't think you should play baseball. Like, that's part of the game. You shouldn't just be so good at hitting that you can like get away with it. But then again, this is coming from a pitcher. So obviously, like, yeah. I'm gonna be a little biased. Like, I'd rather have an easier out than have to face like the best hitter in the world. So from that aspect, like, I really hope they don't get rid of it. The safety issue is what they're like claiming. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like, if you can't protect yourself as a professional athlete, like, come on, like, you're a pro athlete, be athletic. I enjoyed it as much as it was like frustrating, you know. At least like I felt towards the end of the year, I finally got better with it. It was just such a big adjustment going from like the last time I hit, like, I swung a little bit my freshman year of junior college in the fall, but guys back there were throwing like 85. Mm-hmm. So then when I come up to pro ball and I'm facing guys throwing 95 plus, or like, even if they're low 90s, it's got a ton of movement. I had no shot. You know, I finally found one in Hartford. I found one. I hit it pretty well too. I think it was like 100 off the bat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. I really like it. I think it's like a cool part of the game for sure. You know, and it's like, if you're a good hitting pitcher, that's such an advantage for your team. Or if you can at least handle the bat, like, that's night and day difference to the guy that goes up there in the free out. You know, it makes the game, I would say, for at least like the hardcore baseball fans, like, a lot more interesting.
I've always been a fan of it. I enjoy getting to watch you guys hit, and I got to see you get your first professional hit last year. You went 1-for-16, but you got one. So
you don't have to throw me under the bus like that.
I didn't mean it like that. It was the first time you'd hit since it had been what, 6 years, 5-6 years since you had hit?
Seven.
I mean, getting a hit at all, at least if pitcher's hitting goes away, you got one. So
yeah,
you
at got least the I one got there. One. That's true. Yeah, I guess it's more than you can say for a lot of guys. You know, I got a professional hit.
Yeah. Now, every time you're facing somebody in the box, you can say, I know what you're seeing. I've been in that view too. You haven't been out here where I am, but I've been where you are.
So give that is true. Load. That is very true.
So you're a left-handed pitcher, but you swing right-handed. How did that happen?
I don't know. I do a lot of things right-handed. I think it all started. I was in like kindergarten and I was writing left-handed, and my teacher took the pencil out of my hand and was like, no, you need to write with this hand. And like, without thinking anything of it, I was like, okay, like, I guess I'll write with this way. And so from then on, I think I started to do a lot of things right-handed. I mean, I swing a golf club right-handed, played hockey right-handed, but that's like a little bit different hockey. Like, it's like very interchangeable with like your top hand being your lead hand and whatnot. But yeah, I don't really know. Like, my parents didn't tape my hand behind my back and make me throw left-handed or anything like that. It just kind of like happened naturally.
Well, that's a blessing, because it's all left-handed pitching is certainly a commodity, and you happen to be a good left-handed pitcher, but, you know, left-handed pitchers are always something that people are looking for. So I guess if you got the luck of the draw on that, you hit the lottery.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm very thankful. I think about that a lot, like, especially at this place I'm training. It seems like everybody at this place throws like 98 to 100. So I'm like, well, at least I'm left-handed, so I have that, you know, so.
So growing up in Michigan, backtracking to that just a little bit, mm-hmm. It gets pretty cold there. It snows quite a bit. I only lived there in the summer, so I didn't get to really experience those cold Michigan.
Oh, you didn't get all the fun then?
No, which I'm perfectly okay with. I did Pennsylvania for a number of years, and that was bad enough. And Michigan, I can't imagine. But was it a challenge growing up in a cold climate like that and trying to play baseball?
It's just different, you know, like, everything's indoors in the off season. That's like the biggest difference. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I moved out here so early this year. I was just able to throw outside all off season in Arizona, as opposed to Michigan, where I'm throwing inside basically a turf building warehouse. A lot of people are always like, oh, like, why are people from down south or like California or Texas like better baseball players? It's like, well, because they play year round outside, as where Michigan, like, all you can do is train indoors. You can't really like play full games inside. So you lose out on a lot of stuff being from up north for sure.
Richmond, on the other hand, gets very hot. And as you got to experience it last summer, you probably experienced it some in the South Atlantic League back in 2017 when you played for Augusta. So as a Northern Midwest guy, and I know that heat's a little different from the Arizona heat, right? Was that a challenge, or that humid, sticky, hot summer?
Yes, 1,000%. Like, it's always been a struggle for me. I don't know why. My body's just not used to it. Like, those days where it's 100 degrees with 100% humidity, like, I feel dead on the mound. Like, those are without a doubt, my worst outings for sure. So I think that's like the next step. I actually threw a live last week here in Arizona where it was 110. I was supposed to throw three innings. I ended up throwing like two and just tried to max out my pitches for the innings because I was so dog tired from the heat. Like that's like the next step. I feel like is just somehow finding a way to get acclimated when it's unbelievably hot out.
Well, even with all the heat last year, you set a new career high in innings pitch. You threw 141, which was in just the regular season, and that was the most that you had thrown in a year. So it was that part of that step is pitching through all that and also stretching yourself out to add some more innings onto the workload that you're able to do?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the big thing. It's just like the more I do it, the more I get used to it. It was like growing up, like especially when I was in junior college, we'd start playing games in Michigan in like mid-March where it was still snowing. So like me throwing in the cold is like a walk in the park compared to me throwing in 110 degree weather. It's just because I haven't really done it, you know? And then I think this past season, just throwing so many innings, really, that's just how you build up stamina, you know? Like this year's going to be a challenge because we're going to have a shortened season if there is a season. Or if I'm wherever, like I'm not going to throw 140 innings again. There's just no physical way I'm going to do that. So I got to figure out how to build off last year's like endurance and kind of not regress from where I was at, like stamina wise.
Growing up north, a lot of good baseball players from up in the north, the Midwest, end up going down south for college. You went to Jackson Community College, a little bit east of where you're from there in Michigan. What led you to Jackson?
I wasn't very good. Honestly, like that's really what it came down to. Like I was undersized out of high school. I didn't really know what the weight room was. Like I thought I kind of did. I had like a weightlifting class in high school. I was like, oh, like if I do a couple curls and like try to do some bench press, like maybe I'll get stronger. So the biggest thing for me, like a lot of kids go to junior college for like other reasons. But for me, it was like I was just such a late bloomer. I was undersized. I think I topped out at 84 out of high school. So there was like no D1 offers for me on the table whatsoever. And I just like, I don't know, I was like 6 foot and 165, 170. So the main reason for me to go there was to kind of figure out if I could get stronger. And like, luckily I ended up growing about 3 inches in my 2 years there and putting on a decent amount of weight. I think I came out of there around 205. It was really for me just like a stepping stone, I guess, to kind of get a little bit bigger and stronger and start throwing harder for sure. A
couple of decently successful years at Jackson Community College, and then you headed off to the Big Ten to join the Indiana Hoosiers. What was that recruiting process like going from junior college to a Division I school in the Big Ten?
It happened like super fast. I remember I had a pretty good first year at Jackson. I just walked a lot of guys and then I really hit the weight room hard in the summer. And then I made a video, like a recruiting video right before the fall started, like of me throwing and whatever. And then I sent that video out to like every school I could think of. And it was really funny. The only reason I sent it to Indiana is because my roommate in junior college, my first year, he played second base. And me and him just kind of didn't get along. We were like always trying to one-up each other about whatever. Like it didn't matter anything. It was like, no, I'm better at this. And like, so he's like, yeah, I like talked to Indiana, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to go on a visit. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to send my stuff there. And so I ended up sending my thing there and Tracy Smith reached out to me. I was like, hey, we really like this video. We want you to come in and take a tour and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, cool. So I'd already had a couple other visits and a couple other teams that I had talked to before. But as soon as I went to Indiana, like within 5 minutes of getting on the campus, I knew I was going there. Like it was the easiest decision I've ever made.
Do you get back there very much these days?
Not as much as I'd like to. I went back the year after I got drafted and then I went back one more time. It's just, it's kind of tough, you know, being 6.5 hours away from my home in Michigan and like all my buddies I went to school with there now gone. So every year, every fall, it seems like we all try to get back together and go there, but it seems like there's always something that weekend that I just can't seem to get there, you know?
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. While you were at Indiana, you played for a year with Ryan Halsted. You two are in the same organization now, and you both played in Richmond together last year. You were both on the Flying Squirrels together. Kind of a crazy small world baseball situation where somebody that you played alongside in your college career ends up being wearing the same uniform as you in your professional career, right?
Yeah, it's really wild. Like I came in and he was a fifth year senior. So he was like the old guy. Well, I say old, he was probably 22 regardless. Like he'd been around the block and kind of established that he was our closer. Like he was the guy. Me and him didn't really talk as much as we do now for sure. Like we're a lot closer now, especially after playing together in Richmond, but it is kind of cool to see someone that you went to school with and like a familiar face in your organization. It makes it a lot easier, especially because you normally don't know that many guys through the organization other than the kids you're drafted with.
At AAA, we've seen breakdowns, lockouts, and full stops. 118 years of them. So trust us when we say we can get through anything by navigating it together. See how we're helping to keep you safe. Visit AAA.com/keepmoving.
Back to the Funville Nine, driven by AAA, the official podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels.
2019, last year, you got to play at AA for the first time. Now, you didn't start the year with Richmond. You started the year back with San Jose. Did you come into the year with an expectation that that's where you were going to start, or did you think you were going to be at AA and had to really go out and prove it over four or five games in the California League?
Honestly, I was just hoping to break with the team last year. After my first year in pro ball, well, I guess when I got drafted, I had some really good success, like an AZL, but I threw a bunch of innings in college that were kind of limiting me. And then my second year, I really struggled in Augusta. So it kind of put me back a little bit, I guess, in the mind of like the front office and whatever, just because I like normally you don't see like a senior sign guy struggle in low A. Normally they're like developed enough and whatever. So we were trying to change a bunch of things my first full season, and it didn't go very well. So my second year, I was kind of coming in with not really knowing what was going to happen with me. You know, we were on our second pitching coordinator at that time, so I didn't know who our staff was on the pitching side, and they didn't really give me like any idea of what I was going to do. So my second year, I started and extended, not really knowing why. Like, I thought I had a good spring, you know, came in shape, like finally kind of figured out my mechanics a little bit, stopped trying to reinvent the wheel. And then I went to San Jose for a day, and then went back to extended, and then went back up to San Jose like a month later for a month, and then was pitching really well out of the bullpen in San Jose my second year. So I was like, oh, like maybe I'm going to be a reliever. I don't know. Maybe this is my thing in pro ball. And then I get a call from our pitching coordinator. He's like, hey, like, we're going to need you to go down to Augusta to start. And I was like completely shocked. You know, I felt like I was our best arm out of the bullpen, at least left-handed that year. You know, I was coming in to like big situations. I felt like I was doing my job, and they're like, well, you're doing a good job, we want you to be a starter again. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll go back to Augusta. So I spent the rest of the year in Augusta in 18. So when 19 came around, I was kind of like, all right, like, I'm not old, but like getting there. So if I can just make a team, that's really all I care about. I don't care where it's going to be. Like, I'm confident in my abilities. You know, I started doing some new stuff in the offseason with the weighted balls to kind of clean up my arm path a little bit and just get me to be more consistent. And I think that was like the biggest jump I made last year, was just I felt like the majority of my outings, I was really consistent. Like, I didn't feel like I was searching for my mechanics or whatever. So I guess to answer, I didn't really know where I was going to start in 19. I didn't know what 19 was going to have really in store for me. I guess if you would have told me that I was going to go to AA and then be an all-star in AA and then finish the season up in AAA winning a national championship, I probably would have laughed and been like, you're crazy. But for me, it was more just, I was trying to just make a team out of spring training last year.
Yeah, I would say that whatever you went into 2019 with certainly seemed to work out. You had a lot of success to start the year in San Jose. You got a pretty quick bump up to AA about a month or so into the season. And then you had a really successful year with Richmond. And you just named some of the accomplishments that you had while you were there. But also, you set some of the Richmond franchise records. You're the lowest batting average against for a starting pitcher in team history, 191. The lowest overall batting average against in team history. The lowest whip for a season in team history, which for the people who don't know those stats, it's walks plus hits per innings pitch, the average there. So it seemed like...
Oh, I didn't even know I set the whip record. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, 1.05 was the new single season whip record.
You're close to getting under one. Now I'm like disappointed that I walked too many guys.
I think you were hovering. You went up and down over that mark.
Yeah.
Basically, those numbers say that you did a really good job of keeping guys off base throughout the year, but also you made your mark in the Flying Squirrels record books with that year where you kind of went in just hoping to break camp with a team.
Yeah, I think that's what it takes sometimes. You know, I remember talking to some guys my first year in pro ball, like, oh, hitters kind of move steadily, and then pitchers are weird. Like, they can either move steadily or they'll have like a couple bad years and all of a sudden just shoot right up when things start to click. So it felt like last year stuff kind of started to click, and that's what I saw. I saw some really good progress. And you know, when you're throwing well, your confidence goes up. When your confidence is up, the sky's the limit, really.
And the jump to AA, they say historically, is one that people struggle with the most, especially for pitchers. It's a little different in the Giants system because you go from the California League where balls fly out of the ballpark, and then you come
right, yeah, and then you go to the world's biggest stadium where it feels like you can give up whatever you want and it's not going to get out.
Yeah, absolutely. The Diamond especially, but the Eastern League is a little bit more pitcher friendly as a whole, but not every ballpark is. But you adjusted well your first couple of months in AA. Do you think that was just more of a tribute to the things that you came into the season with that you mentioned a moment ago?
I think so, yeah. And I know a lot of guys say that. They're like, how was the jump to AA? And like, I don't want to sound arrogant, but honestly, I didn't think it was that. I thought it was a little bit easier to pitch in Double A, you know, like you come from the Cal League where hitters are just ambushing everything. Like I felt like if I threw anything around the plate, guys are going to try to hit it out because all the parks are so small. Once I got to the Eastern League, I could kind of see hitters have more of them, then I could attack them that way. I felt I was able to be a smarter pitcher in Double A than I was in High A. Like I had more of a plan of attack. Like we can get deep into this if you want to, I don't know, but like I found out how my fastball spins, we played everything off that. Like I didn't know coming into that season really what my fastball did. This was all kind of new for us, and we got some new guys with the Giants who kind of like saw my numbers right away, and they were like, hey, like let's go talk about this. And no one had ever approached me on that before, so I was like, sure, like you tell me to throw fastballs up in the zone, like I'm all for it, because everything I had heard before was throw fastballs down, and every time I throw a fastball down I see you get hit 700 feet, so sure, let's try something new. And I would really say that's where most of my success came from last year, was just throw to the specific quadrants that I was told to, rather than just kind of guessing.
Embracing some of the newer ways of thinking, because like you said, it's always been pitcher goes out there, you want to keep the ball down the zone, you want to work around the lower edges of the strike zone box. More and more analytical numbers are showing that there are some other ways to have success, and not everyone fits into the same box, right?
Exactly, yeah. And that was like the biggest thing I struggled with my first year. They're like, oh, we need you to get more ground balls. I'm like, well, I've never gotten ground ball outs on my fastball in my entire life. It just doesn't happen. I don't know why. Like, I had no idea at that time that my spin rate was really high and like my vertical break was really high. Now looking back on it, it makes sense why I struggled so bad to get guys out in my first year, because I was basically just fighting myself the whole time.
And it makes a lot of sense. And that's what teams like the Giants, and we're seeing it all across baseball, everyone's having a more specialized plan for their development, rather than back in the day, you know, each affiliate would have a manager, a trainer, and a pitching coach. And the pitching coach would work on the same things with pretty much every guy. Now it's the minor league staffs have grown huge numbers. There are more and more rovers coming in all the time. And each one of you guys has a very unique plan that's custom built for what works best for you. If you had been pitching several years ago with the struggle that you say that you had early in your career, that might have been the end of the road. The new analytics and stuff like that might be something that down the road, the success that you end up having, you might not have had that opportunity back in the past.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like I'm completely on board with, I don't want to say I'd be out of baseball because I'm left-handed, so there's normally always an opportunity, but I definitely would not be where I am right now. I don't know where I would be, but I'm very thankful for where I am. And I'm very thankful that we have started to look in the analytical direction with the Giants. It's really saved my career, to be completely honest.
I don't think I ever knew that about your pitching and your growth in that. And that makes a lot of sense, especially looking at your career arc to that point through 2019. Looking back again at last year, your fourth overall season in professional baseball, third full year, got up to Double A, and you kind of had three phases in Double A last year. You were really strong those first 12 games, 2-2 with a 2.98 ERA. And that was going in the All-Star break. You end up getting named an All-Star, and we'll talk about that again in just a little bit. But then coming out of the break, you had about a five-game stretch where there were some struggles coming out of the All-Star break in July and into the beginning of August, 6.5 ERA. But then the switch flipped again, and down the stretch in August, you were almost untouchable through those last five starts with Richmond before you went up to Sacramento, a 1.78 ERA. And there are much more analytical numbers that are a bit above my head to show other more in-depth versions of that success. But in those three kind of phases, were there any differences between those three different groups of starts for you in the season last year?
Yeah, 100%. So right when I got there, I was feeling really good. Like I felt like everything was going well when I left San Jose. Body felt good. You know, I hadn't really hit that mid-season like lull yet, you know, and like you get promoted to Double A, you're going to be a little more amped up, you know, your first couple of times out there and whatnot. So definitely like right when I got there, I felt like I was in a really good groove. Towards the end of June, beginning of July, like I felt my stuff kind of change a little bit. Like didn't feel like the ball was coming out as well. I couldn't really figure out why. Like I was having some like hip issues, like getting into my back leg. We were trying to figure it out with the training staff, like what was going on. Like I just kind of felt weak on my back. I got into like this rut where all of a sudden like my tires are spinning. Everything's kind of not going the way it used to go. Trying to figure out like what's wrong? Why is this happening? Trying to like work on stuff that basically wasn't broken. I think I was just kind of hitting like a little bit of a lull. You know what I mean? Like body starting to break down a little bit. So once I kind of threw everything out, I was like, all right, I'm not broken. Stop trying to overdo everything. I was doing like hip exercises twice a day, every day. And I was like, this is dumb. Like I'm not giving my body any time to recover. Like no wonder why I can't get off my backside. So right towards the end of July, I was like, all right, screw it. Like I'm just going to go back to what I did in the beginning. And I'm just going to try to like not overthink while I'm on the mound. And lo and behold, like, boom, I'm back to like my normal self when I got there. Like, my numbers were better. Ball came out better. Like, I felt like my last few starts were pretty dominant too. Like, I felt like I could do whatever I wanted with the baseball and throw the ball by guys whenever I needed to.
The numbers are telling for you guys, and on the surface, those tell the story of how your season goes down into the record books. But for you, it seems like that realization and going through that experience could be something, as you learn about yourself and your body and how it handles the season, that'll really help you out growing as a pitcher down the road.
Oh, 100%. Like my worst obstacle has kind of always been me, I guess, when it comes to baseball. Like, I try to fix things when they don't need to be fixed. Last year was one of the first years that I didn't watch video, like, at all of my starts. Like, I just didn't watch it. I was like, I don't need to watch it. And then lo and behold, when I got in that, like, I had like two bad outings in a row, and I was like, oh, what's wrong? Let me go look. Nothing was wrong. You know, like, I just tried to overdo everything. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest thing for me, is just, you're going to have bad outings. It's baseball. I can't go out there and throw a perfect game every time. As much as I want to, as great as that would be, and as, I'd make a ton of money if I could do it, but I can't. For me, it's just like, get out of my own way. You're not broken. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. You're not broken. Don't try to fix something that's not broken.
And that goes again to, not everybody fits into the same box, and baseball adjusting more to that line of thinking, whereas some guys need to watch video of themselves all the time, and they need to be breaking down micro things. And for some people, it doesn't have the same impact for them. It sounds like that's a realization that you found about yourself over these last couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
So last year, you picked up the first All-Star selection of your professional career. And not only that, but it was in a year where your home team, Richmond Flying Squirrels, were hosting the All-Star game at Diamond. And not only that, but you were also named the starting pitcher for the All-Star game in your home stadium. What did that whole experience mean to you?
It was so cool, Trey. Like, I feel like you couldn't write it better than that. You know what I mean? Like, first All-Star game, and like, I don't have to travel to go to it, because I remember hearing a lot of guys like, oh, like, I flew in on a red eye the night before. I'm like, well, I woke up in my own bed, so this is cool. And it was awesome because I got to have my girlfriend out there, and my parents drove down too. So I got to have like a whole family experience. And I mean, you were there. It was awesome. It was so cool. Everybody talked about how great it was. And I mean, for me, it was the only All-Star game I've been in. So I'm like, oh yeah, this is really cool. But everyone else was like, oh, this is the best, like, way better than last year's. No one's ever going to top this. So it was an unbelievable experience. Parney did a great job setting everything up. And like, the staff in Richmond is always amazing. They do a great job with regular games, and they went way above and beyond for the All-Star games and the concert, and just from everything. Like, it was probably the coolest experience I've had baseball-wise. I think it does top like the national championship win too, which was pretty cool. But the whole All-Star experience in Richmond was just amazing.
Yeah, I came in, I got hired with Richmond near the end of the 2018 calendar year. So by that point, most of the stuff that they had was already pretty much planned. So no self-pats on the back for me with this. I'm not saying that at all. But to compliment my coworkers in that front office, and from Parney on down through everybody, they did such a great job of putting that together. I've been to some other minor league All-Star games too, and I've been to some that were really good. I went to the one in West Michigan out near your hometown back in 2014, and they had a really hard year that year. Half their stadium burned down, and they had to get it ready, and they did a great job. They did a great job getting that together. I've been to some others that were kind of clunkers, and that the players that I talked to said that they didn't have a great experience. So we did a lot to make sure that the fans had a great experience, which I think all the All-Star hosts do, but we really wanted to make sure that you guys had a great experience too, because normally that All-Star break, those 3 days, are such a rare chance to catch your breath in the middle of the season. And if being named an All-Star to celebrate your great performance becomes something that's not enjoyable, and is something that becomes more of a burden than it is a celebration, well, that's not any good. So it's been really fun to hear guys like you and from other teams around the Eastern League who spoke so highly of their experience, because that's what it seemed like everybody was striving for. And it was a blast. I enjoyed it as well. It was a lot of work on our end for what we had to do, but it was one of my favorite memories of my baseball career on my end so far.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It was great. I can't imagine. Like, I remember Parney saying, he's like, yeah, I haven't slept in like 2 days, but I hope you guys are having a good time. I'm like, heck yeah, dude. Like, this is great. So it was just so cool. Like, bringing everybody together and getting to meet all the guys from the other teams too was like really, really cool after playing against them. And especially the hitters being like, I don't like this guy. Like, it was tough to get out, but getting to meet them and hang out with them like after the game and whatnot, like, realize that they're people too. Like, obviously when you're on the field, it's different, but just being around guys like that was so awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool to get to meet some of the players from the other teams. In your shoes, you know, you face them. They're just they're a body in the batter's box that you're trying to get out. And from our perspective, they're, you know, the other team's guys that you see. You know, you see them on a screen or you see them down in front of you. But it was cool to get to interact with some of those other players. And hopefully you guys got to make some memories there that you'll take with you all the way through your career. I hope lots of great things happen for all of you. And I hope that that's one of them that stands out in your mind.
Well, for sure it will be.
Founded in 1996, SICOM is an award-winning IT systems integrator headquartered in Richmond with offices throughout Virginia. Their focus is on mid-Atlantic companies, healthcare organizations, educational institutions, and governments looking to improve their technology return on investment. SICOM is a trusted partner to deliver a range of IT solutions and services that keep companies connected. Named as one of the top workplaces in Richmond, SICOM is also the employer of choice for the best talent in the region and are committed to providing outstanding and memorable service.
Back to the Funville Nine, driven by AAA, the official podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels.
So after Labor Day, you thought your season was over, right? You were packed up, ready to shut it down. Yep. And then you get a call saying, yep, hey, you need to go join Sacramento. What happened there?
That was wild. So I remember we were all leaving Richmond and everybody was super happy. Like, season's over. It's a long season. Season's over. Me and a couple guys were at the airport, had a couple beers before we got on our flight. And I was actually flying to Arizona to go spend some time with my girlfriend because she was supposed to come a couple times during the season. It just didn't end up working out with like me getting moved around and whatnot. So I was like, I'm just going to come out there and then I'll get a plane ticket back to Michigan in like a week or so because it'll be cheaper to do that than it would be like to fly all the way from Michigan to Arizona and whatever. Get into Arizona. I think we went to dinner or something. Just hanging out and whatever. Wake up the next morning, I got a call from Kyle Haynes, our director of player
development.
Yeah, he's like the head honcho of all us minor league guys. And he's like, hey, like, how are you doing? I'm like, good. He's like, hey, just want to let you know you might need to go to AAA for the playoff run, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, I have my stuff like still in my bag. Do you want to just send me now? And he's like, no, don't worry about it. We'll let you know if we need you. I'm like, oh, cool. So like, what am I supposed to do? Just kind of hang out. Thankfully, I did go to Arizona. So what I did is I just went to the Giants facility in Scottsdale for a couple days, like every day to go throw. And I got a couple lifts in and throw, just kind of keep things working. Like I threw a bullpen with our now pitching coordinator, Justin Lear, who was the director of like the rehab coordinator or something before. So I actually ended up getting to work with him for a day. And we kind of just talked a little bit about baseball. And then lo and behold, I got another call from Kyle saying, hey, like, you got to go start in Vegas. So I flew to Vegas and ended up making a start, like the game 5 start, because the series was tied. So it was like a do or die game for us. And we ended up winning that game. And then we swept Round Rock. And then I ended up starting the final game of the season in Memphis. So it went from being like, oh, season's over, kind of, it was like a roller coaster, kind of like we're in right now. Like, maybe we're going to play, maybe we're not. So it was like, all right, shut it down and then ramp it back up. And then kind of like, oh, they lost 2 games, so maybe I'm not going to pitch. And then all of a sudden they won 2 games. So I'm like, all right, I guess I got to go throw now. It was pretty crazy, but it was also like, it was cool to kind of think my season was over, but then get a little bit extra on the end.
So y'all went through the playoff run. You joined the team in Vegas in the semifinals, I guess, the PCL. They swept the Pacific Coast League Championship Series. And then what there is after that, for those who don't know, it's a 1-game winner-take-all AAA National Championship game, and it's in a predetermined site every year. Last year, they played it in Memphis, Tennessee, and it was against Columbus. And you ended up being the starting pitcher for the winner-take-all National Championship game for a team that you didn't even pitch for in the regular season. Well, I guess you did once. You pitched once in the regular season.
I had one outing in April?
April or maybe the beginning. I think it was the very end of April. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. It was a long year, so I don't remember.
So you end up making a start in that game. Again, not only do y'all win the national championship, you were the starting pitcher, 5 scoreless innings. You end up being named the AAA National Championship Game Most Valuable Player. And what a cap to what had to be a pretty eventful year for you in 2019.
It felt like it was kind of like the little cherry on top, you know? Like, I was really hoping I was going to get to go to the fall league. I wanted to keep throwing. You know, I had like that little rough spurt in the middle, so I kind of wanted to get back out there because I felt like I ended the season so good. And I talked to some guys with the Giants, like, hey, like, arm feels good. Like, I know you want me to work on the slider. Can I go to the fall league? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, like, you can't. You've thrown too much. I'm like, well, I feel good. They're like, shut up. Stop asking. like we make the rules. I'm like, all right, sir, yes, sir, sorry. But, and so I don't know. It's one of those things where you kind of always like hope for something and then it doesn't go through. But then God kind of gives you that extra thing of like, this is why I said no. You know what I mean? Like there's always something that seems to come from everything that's a little bit better than what you hope for.
Championships are rare. I mean, I know a lot of people who have been a part of this game for a long time who've never been a part of a championship. And, you know, you can go on and have a 15-year major league career and not even come close. So even in the minor leagues, you cherish those titles. They might not happen again. You could have a lot of different things go right. But championships are the ultimate goal for everyone when they set out in February and March to get the season started. For us, we had most of you guys who were on that Sacramento team in Richmond for most of the year. It was a little bit weird because Sacramento made that playoff run, the roster that was more than half made up of guys who were in Richmond almost the entire year. And it's not like we right. saw a lot of wins in Richmond last year.
Exactly. That's what was so funny because we were all there like, why couldn't we win games like this in Richmond, you know? And then we get to the playoffs and just seemed like we dominated everybody. So it was pretty funny seeing like all of my teammates from Richmond make up the majority of that starting lineup with a handful of other guys who have been up in Sacramento for the whole year or whatever. But it was really cool to see our team go from basically being Richmond up to Sacramento. And a couple guys called us like the Sacramento Flying River Kitties or whatever, because we were basically like the Richmond Flying Squirrels, just a little bit different.
Yeah, we would have loved to have seen some more games, I'm sure, won in Richmond. But ultimately, we were very happy to see you guys grow and get the chance to go up there and play at the highest minor league level, you know, on the doorstep of the major leagues and win a championship at the highest minor league level that there is. Regardless of what uniform you were wearing, you know, we certainly felt like we enjoyed being a part of that journey and getting to, most of our front office, we were all together the night of that championship game. We all got together and watched it and we were pulling hard for you guys. And
it was really cool to see.
I wanted to ask you this earlier. I actually forgot to hit on this. Back when you were with Richmond in the summer, pretty late in the season, you actually made what I'm sure has to be your radio broadcasting debut, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, when we had that like 27 inning game, Matt Winston and pitch. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, you hopped on the air. I vacated my seat, which I was very happy to do by that point. I think that game went 13 or 14 innings, but it certainly felt like 27. And then we had a trip to Akron after the game, a long bus ride.
Yeah, I had to pitch the next day too. I remember that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you hopped on the air with Jake Eisenberg, who's now a former Flying Squirrels broadcaster. He's off to the Omaha Storm Chasers whenever we start playing ball again. That was your first broadcasting experience, right? What was it like?
Yeah, it was. It was really fun. You know, it's so different to see the game from that side, talking about like the guys that you play with and like and the guys that you play against. You know, it was so much different than what I was used to, but it was such a cool experience.
You think 15, 20, 25, 30 years from now when you're done playing that maybe the booth will come calling, that'll be something that you'll have as a nice post-retirement gig?
That'd be cool. That'd be really cool. I mean, if I could get like guys like you and Jake to sit next to me, it'd be a lot more easy and a lot more fun. But yeah, I mean, the door's always open. You know, hopefully I can play long enough where I don't have to do anything for a job, I guess, afterwards. And if I could do something like broadcasting and kind of give back to the game in that way, I think that'd be awesome.
I think you've got a mind that would be good for it, and you can articulate thoughts well enough that I think that would be good for it. But we don't want to see you go down that path for, like I said, 15, 20 years. Cy Young's
in the
show.
Let me get big league time and get some money in my pocket before I get to retire, for sure.
All right, man. We've gone way longer on this than I expected us to go today, but it's been a lot of fun to get a chance to catch up with you and talk with you and reflect back on your time in Richmond and your path to get there. And I'm so appreciative of you taking some time to join us for this radio show and podcast. You're the first pitcher we've had on. It's the first time we've gotten to hear a perspective from that side of the battle.
Oh, well, cool. Well, thanks, Trey. I appreciate you having me. Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. I'm happy I got to do it.
Yeah, thanks. We'll catch up with you again at some point soon down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks, Trey.
And that's a wrap for episode 3 of the Funville 9, driven by AAA. Don't forget you can catch the Funville 9 every Monday night at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sports Radio 910 The Fan and 105.1 FM in the Richmond area, as well as on thefanrichmond.com and on the radio.com app. Keep up with everything going on with the Richmond Flying Squirrels at squirrelsbaseball.com, as well as on social media through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And we've got plenty of exciting announcements coming up for some things going on at the Diamond throughout the summer. If you have any thoughts or comments about the show, good or bad, or if there's someone you'd like to see us have on as a guest in a future episode, shoot me a note on Twitter. I'm at TreyWilson757. A special thank you to our friends at AAA for helping to make this podcast and radio show possible. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the Funville 9, driven by AAA.
You've been listening to the Funville Nine, driven by AAA, the official podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.